The show's live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. We've got some classical and we've got some jazz, and we've kind of got some world music on the show as well. My guests will be violinist Lara St. John, who is appearing as a guest with the Heartland Festival Orchestra this weekend for two performances, Saturday and Sunday in Peoria, music by Vivaldi and Piazzolla. And then later on in the show, talk with percussionist Craig Russo and about his Latin Jazz Project, the Craig Russo Latin Jazz Project. They're having a CD release party tonight at 7 o'clock at the Iron Post in Urbana, and another one in Springfield on the 20th of this month. So we'll talk with Craig Russo and hear from that new CD, all of it happening today on Live and Local. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Lara St. John. She is a Canadian-born violinist currently living in New York, and she is going to be coming to Peoria to play with the Heartland Festival Orchestra this weekend. Two performances of a program that includes, well, it's called Eight Seasons, and you can do the math. There's four seasons of Vivaldi and four seasons by Argentinian composer Astor Piazzolla. She's on the phone with me now from New York. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
When did you get into the music of Piazzolla?
Actually, funny enough, I grew up with it. My father was a language teacher, French and Spanish, and kind of an Argentinophile. So we had just Piazzolla, Mercedes Sosa, Yupanqui. I mean, all of these Argentinian singers, songwriters, composers were constantly going in our house, which is kind of a weird thing for a little Canadian girl.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, but so these seasons are you know, they're sort of from the 70s, and I basically grew up with them.
So what took you so long to record some of his music?
Well, this is what I'll be doing in Peoria is an arrangement, actually, of the Estaciones that he did with his band. I didn't commission the arrangement, but they're really nicely done by a guy named Desyatnikov for Gidon Kremer originally. So that arrangement's pretty recent, only a couple of years old.
You have a CD that has these pieces on it. It's your most recent one with the Simon Bolivar Youth Orchestra of Venezuela, which is a wonderful group.
Oh, yeah.
And just got to sample it a little bit since I literally got it in my hands this morning. And you got some very stylish playing of the Vivaldi. And I really enjoyed the Piazzolla because I've heard a lot of people just kind of play it straight. And it sort of feels like they don't quite get it, but you seem to.
Maybe. Well, you know, also these guys, it's like they were born to play this piece, these pieces, you know, the Venezuelans. like the most amazing youth orchestra on earth, and just the energy that these little guys have is just, it's unbelievable.
Well, let's have a little sample of maybe my favorite movement from of the Four Seasons of Buenos Aires by Piazzolla, which is the one representing winter. It might cool things off around here if we play this, because it's going to be steamy today. It's Lara St. John with the Simón Bolívar Youth Orchestra of Venezuela, Eduardo Matarret. Is that how he says his name?
Matarret. Yeah.
Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. Music by Astor Piazzolla, his second of the four seasons, or at least in this recording, is a given second, Invierno Porteño, Winter in Buenos Aires, with violinist Lara St. John and the Simón Bolívar Youth Orchestra of Venezuela. Eduardo Materay conducting, and she's going to be performing that piece, the rest of the four seasons of Vivaldi and all the four seasons of, or sorry, the rest of the four seasons of Piazzolla and all the four seasons of Vivaldi with the Heartland Festival Orchestra conducted by David Commande this weekend twice, on Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Peoria. And we'll give you more information later on. Lara St. John on the phone with me from New York here on Live and Local. You mentioned earlier having grown up with music of Piazzolla and other Argentinians, courtesy of your dad's work. Tell us a little bit about some of your early education, because it's unusual in that it hopped around the world.
Yeah, kind of. Well, I was born in Canada, but I haven't actually lived there since I was about 12. I went to Curtis in Philadelphia at a very young age. I was like 13. And left there a few years later and went to the then Soviet Union for a year, and then to England for a couple of years, and then New York. So, yeah, pretty weird life.
And I read that you ended up not being able to continue in Russia partly because of some of the political things going on there.
Well, I mean, I had a visa for a year. To get that renewed at that time would have been, yeah, well nigh impossible. But, you know, I mean, I had, to this day, it was the best year of my life. I had
really?
Such an incredible time, yeah.
And what do you think you got stylistically from your studies there that you still carried through in your playing?
Well, to be really, really honest about it, I pretty much didn't really study there in the strict sense of the word. I had a teacher at the conservatory, at the Tchaikovsky Conservatory, that A, I couldn't stand, and B, defected. So I didn't really learn so much in that manner, but I made a lot of friends and traveled around the former Soviet Union quite extensively and learned a lot of songs and drank a lot of vodka and had a marvelous, marvelous time.
So I was jokingly going to say that you didn't just go to party, but maybe so.
Well, you know, you kind of, I was 16 at the time, and I didn't know anything about life. All I knew was like a practice room and the Curtis Institute and playing violin. And it really just taught me how to live. You know, there's a bit of a mentality there, at least there was at the time, that, you know, tomorrow may never come. So, you know, it's kind of it's living in the present, which I was not familiar with. And, you know, I mean, my father was French speaking, and we grew up in two languages, which makes it a lot easier to add a third. So, especially with that kind of total immersion and at that age. So, you know, within a month or something, I was pretty fluent, and it was just like the experience of a lifetime.
The repertoire that you have compiled is really quite varied. The earliest recordings, if I read this right, are your works, recordings of Bach?
Yeah, the solo Bach, the C major and D minor was my first, my debut album way back in 95 or 96.
A little bit of a controversial debut by virtue of the cover. Have you lived that down yet?
I really don't think that I've talked about that enough, no.
Yeah, it's one of these sort of Sex Sells covers, I guess.
Well, not really. I mean, have you seen it?
I'm looking at it.
Well, you see, I don't. We're talking on the radio here. I don't want people to get the impression that it's like, you know, something from Hooters.
No, there's a violin in the way.
It certainly is not. Yeah, you can't see a damn thing.
Yeah.
And I guess sort of ostensibly the idea was to bring across the a performer, an instrument, nothing else. You know, sort of the nakedness of what it is to do these solo Bach works. And some folks took it wrong.
And you've come back to Bach. These were a couple of partitas in this recording, and you've recorded all of them recently.
Yeah, I did all of them 3 years ago.
Well, here's a sample from a different Bach recording you made, what, about 10 years ago, I guess, of the Bach concertos.
Yeah.
It's a very different animal. It's the last movement here of the second concerto, the E major concerto with the New York Bach Ensemble. Lars St. John, the violinist, here on Live and Local. Thank you. Violinist Lars St. John in the final movement of Bach's E major violin concerto, performing with the New York Bach Ensemble.
Yeah, it's a really exuberant movement.
Yeah.
He was obviously in such a good mood.
And there's lots of stories about Bach where he doesn't seem to be all that great a mood a lot of the time, at least as a person. But a really joyous piece.
He was a busy guy, man. He had 20 kids.
That's right.
I'm not kidding.
Oh, no, I know. Exactly.
And, he was constantly, like, running up against, you know, the church not paying him. And, you know, like, so he had money woes. And
what's fun?
He's a crazy guy. You know, he used to say, oh, you know, it's just that I work really hard. Anybody could do what I do. Totally not true.
Yeah, exactly. Totally not true. It's fun to read his letters with listening to him complain about this thing or that thing and some of the practicalities.
It seems so petty. You know, you've got this gargantuan figure of music, and he's talking about, like, oh, well, you didn't give me this money for this cantata. It's like, oh, my God. Like,
but
the fact that he would have had to worry about that, you know, just sort of, it makes him more personable in a way.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, you have to deal with the realities of life even back then.
Exactly.
Even if you're Bach.
Yeah, and the whole, I mean, even just thinking about it makes me cringe, the fact that he died because of a botched operation. I mean, he was apparently in perfect health, except for his cataracts.
Well, actually, it makes me cringe to even think of anybody back then trying to do an eye operation. I can't imagine.
Yeah,
apparently they didn't do it.
That's pretty cringeworthy, but...
Yeah.
But the idea also that there was, or that he wrote a St. Luke and a St. Mark, you know, to go with the St. John, the St. Matthew, the fact that those may have been written and lost is, like, that's even more cringeworthy than a 16th century eye operation.
Well.
And you know, we have 206 cantatas, but there were probably more like 400. You know, the fact that paper is not stone.
There's
a bit too bad.
Still a lot of it. Well,
but we have so much, so we should be thankful.
Yeah, and you have a lot of, I mentioned earlier, a nice wide repertoire, and you've recently recorded this concerto by Matthew Hinson, which was the world premiere. Was this written for you?
It wasn't, actually. His publisher, Faber, sent me the premiere recording of it back in 2003. And, you know, people send me stuff all the time. There's, like, pretty much once a week I get something from a composer. And so I do these little tests kind of thing. And, you know, if I can't stand it after 2 minutes, then, you know, out the window it goes. If it passes the sort of 5-minute test, then we go for the gym test. So I, you know, put it on the iPod, take it to the gym, whatever. And I just fell in love with this concerto. It passed the gym test like 100 times. And I tried to get orchestras to do it, but this is back in like 05, 06. Nobody had heard of Matthew Hinson in this continent. And the orchestration is massive. Like, it's 29 percussion instruments, triple winds. You know, I mean, you basically have to be doing Symphonie Fantastique or Mahler 6 or something in the second half to even have the players for it. So I said, well, fine, I've got my own record label. I'm just going to record it. And I did, with the Royal Phil in London, along with a piece by Corigliano and a transcription that a friend of mine and I did. So it's just, the guy has got his own voice. He doesn't sound like anyone else. And to find that these days is almost unheard of.
Where is he from?
He's from Sydney, Australia. He's about, I mean, for a composer, he's very young. He's like, I think he just turned 40.
Yeah, 40, born 68. According to your CD.
Okay, well, then I guess he's 42.
Yeah, there you go. Or will be sometime this year. Well,
here's
some of the last movement. I know you described this in advance to me as great fun. It's called Grand Final Day.
Which apparently in Australia is kind of like New Year's and the Super Bowl all at once.
And so we'll hear it. We'll hear. Here's from the violin concerto of Matthew Hinson, with Lars St. John and the Royal Philharmonic. Sarah, how does she say her last name?
The conductor.
Ioannidis on Live and Local. That was some of the last movement of the Violin Concerto of Matthew Hinson called Grand Final Day. Well, the last movement is called that. And Lara St. John, the violinist, with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Sarah Ioannidis. Did I get that right? Ioannidis. And Lara St. John, my guest here on Live and Local. She's going to be playing with the Heartland Festival Orchestra this weekend in Peoria, music by Vivaldi and Piazzolla. You mentioned that... you have your own record label, and so it gives you some freedom to record more or less what you want. And I read it was named after a pet iguana,
the
record label.
Well, Ted, I started my label about 10 years ago, right around the time when my beloved iguana passed away. So I named it after him. It's called Ancaligon Records.
And where did you come up with that name for an iguana?
Well, Ancaligon was actually the greatest dragon of Morgoth, as documented by J.R.R. Tolkien in the Silmarillion. And I figured if I named my iguana after a dragon, he would grow big and strong. And he did for 5 years, but then unfortunately he died when I was out of town for about 2 months on tour.
And that was that.
10 years ago. So, I have a new one. Who is about 11 months old, and
what's his name?
His name is Cain, actually, C-A-I-N.
Which doesn't come out of Tolkien.
No, it doesn't. No, not this time.
And I have read the Silmarillion, and I'm going to have to go back and find this reference.
And Caligot is actually mentioned once in the Fellowship of the Ring, in the fireside chat that Gandalf and Bilbo have. Frodo. Oh, my God.
I gather you're a fan.
I'm a bit of a ringer, yeah. every year I read them once.
Well, before we let you go, I do need to ask you about something entirely different from the music we're talking about, and that is your group called Polkestra. What possessed you to get involved in this project?
Well, I mean, I am the connector there in my polka band. I had done a couple of klezmer gigs, with the accordion and percussionist from Polkestra. They're both Israeli. And I don't know, one day I just kind of decided, well, you know, why doesn't my label branch out into world music? And also, at the time, we thought it would be just absolutely hilariously fun to put it in the Polka Grammy category. And, of course, the Grammys got wind of what we were doing, and they squashed the category as the disc went into production.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They got rid of their Polka category last June.
That was unkind.
Well, you know, at first I was like, well, that's really mean of them and how horrible. But, you know, we had such a blast and such a fantastic time. And, I mean, the main, our sort of polka expert is Daniel Lapp, who's out in the Pacific Coast. He's a bit of an icon out there. He's, like, just sort of, everybody knows this guy. He's an incredible musician. He's jazz, Celtic, polka, folk, that kind of thing. He plays trumpet, fiddle, any instrument you could possibly name, basically. And so that was fabulous, just having him as part of it. And instead of bass or a trumpet, we have contrabassoon. So, I mean, the whole group is just fantastic fun. I got some arrangements done of classical sort of polka-inspired music. So we brought Beethoven's polkas back to the original polka band.
And called one of the tunes Ludwig van Polka.
Yes.
And
that was a particularly inspired title, I think.
Along with Polka Your Eye Out.
And the horror. Yeah, well, the album is Apocalypse Now, and we were particularly proud of that one.
And I imagine that took, that was quite a brainstorming session that came up with that one. Well, we might as well go out with a sample from here. Oh, and I see there's didgeridoo on at least one of the cuts.
Oh, that's a good friend of mine, actually. He's an Aboriginal guy from Australia, probably obviously the world's greatest didge player. And he happened to be in town, so I grabbed him, took him out of the studio.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of fun stuff. And people can check this out, by the way. You have a MySpace page for Polkestra.
There's a MySpace and a Facebook, and yeah, Polkestra.
Yeah, and you can check out Lara St. John's website, which is LaraStJohn.com. Lots of information about her on there, and you can find out about the CDs. Can you buy them there?
Yeah, and actually, may I mention the upcoming CD?
Absolutely.
It's with the Knights, this fabulous chamber orchestra here in New York City, the Knights with a K. And my brother, Scott St. John, and it's an all Mozart CD. We finally have recorded Mozart's great Sinfonia Concertante for violin and viola. And then he plays a violin concerto, and I play a violin concerto, and that's the album.
And when is that CD due out?
It will be coming out on an iTunes exclusive on August 3rd for 2 months, actually. iTunes is very great to me and my label.
Yeah, you've done quite well on iTunes, I noticed.
Yeah, they've been fabulous. And then in the very front of October for a physical release and worldwide.
All right. Well, let's go out with some polkas. It's Lara St. John, my guest here in Live and Local. I'm going to say Loka.
Well, we...
Why not, right? She's playing with the Heartland Festival Orchestra at Five Points Washington in outside Peoria this Saturday at 7:30, and then at the Mackinac Valley Vineyard Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, a Vivaldi and Piazzolla program. David Commande conducting that concert, and I really am appreciate your joining us on the show today.
Thanks very much. It's been great.
And we're going out, I think, with the Hora. Is that what we decided?
The Hora, yes, from Apocalypse Now.
With Polkestra featuring, among others, violinist Lara St. John. Thanks very much. Thank you.
The Horror, the Horror, from the disc called Apocalypse Now by the band called Polkestra, featuring in that performance violinist Laura St. John, who's going to be with the Heartland Festival Orchestra playing Vivaldi and Piazzolla this weekend. For more information in Peoria, for more information, go to heartlandfestivalorchestra.org. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, conversation with Craig Russo of the Craig Russo Latin Jazz Project, who are playing at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. Support for today's show on Live and Local is made possible in part by the Music Shop and Pro Sound Center, now located at 27 East Market View Drive in Market View Plaza, Champaign. The Music Shop specializes in the sales and rental of band and orchestra instruments, digital keyboards, guitars, amps, and drums, along with a wide variety of sheet music. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Craig Russo, who is the title guy in the Craig Russo Latin Jazz Project, who are going to be in Urbana tonight with a CD release party at the Iron Post downtown Urbana. And I just got said CD in my hand, picked it up yesterday. From Pogo Studios with Mark Rubel there, and it is called Mambo Influenciado. On the phone with me now from Springfield is Craig Russo himself. Thanks for joining us.
And good to be with you.
And so this was laid down just recently, obviously.
Yes, a lot of this was recorded last summer, and a couple of the tunes were recorded a few months earlier when a friend of mine, a vocalist, Nancy Kelly, just happened to be passing through the region, and I grabbed her up and asked her if she wanted to be part of this, and she jumped at the opportunity. So, yes, that's right. It's our most recent CD, and within the last year.
Yeah, and you've got some performers here who will be familiar to audiences, particularly in Champaign-Urbana, on account of the fact that they play here a lot of and live here. Chip McNeil on tenor sax, who's on the University of Illinois faculty, as well as Chip Stevens, the pianist. Jeff Helgeson, the trumpet player. Joan Hickey, actually, she lives in Chicago, doesn't she?
She does live in Chicago. I think she also has some faculty association
yep.
as well.
Yep. Josh Walden is a bassist in CU, and Jeff Magby, wonderful drummer. So you must come over here a lot to practice with these guys, play with these guys.
Well, we try to play rather than practice. certainly for a special engagement like tonight, yeah, we did buff things up a little bit, but we stay pretty active, and these are really my A-plus guys for this group, and it's a great privilege to play with them. It's always different, and what I like about it is all the guys in the group really know the language of jazz and the language of the Latin rhythms that we play, and that's really essential. It's hard to find people who are so well versed in both languages.
I know we talked about this probably about a year ago when you and I had our one other conversation on this program, but the likelihood that anybody heard that interview and will remember if over that period of time is probably not too great. So remind me how you got into Latin percussion in the first place. I should say for the listeners that, because they won't even find this on your your website, you're actually a radiologist by trade.
Well, one has to make a living somehow,
yeah.
Right? making a living from music, or especially jazz, or anything out the mainstream, is extremely difficult. So I thought I should have a regular job so I can subsidize what I really like to do. And nevertheless, this has been a lifetime pursuit and commitment of mine. I started out in music, and then I drifted away for a while and got some other professional training, and then drifted back about the last 10 or 15 years. I've always played drum set, and that was my main instrument, but if you're a percussionist, you can't help but be really attracted to Latin music, because it's so, it's so much about the groove, and it's so much about, it's exciting, and it's just percussion heavy. So with that in mind, I began to delve into it a bit more, and started to get some work as a percussionist, as a conga player too, in the East Coast and where I used to live. And I just have continued to try to grow with it and learn it, and it's a fascinating world. Both the drum set playing is different and unique, and of course playing congas is a completely different instrument. A lot of what I've learned over the last 10 years has come from taking special study trips to Cuba, which has been just a fascinating, life-changing experience. And that's what has really, between that kind of educational experience and the opportunity to take what I've learned and bring it here, share it with the people in my group, and create something new, it's been really an exciting time for creative growth and bring something new to the area, too.
Sure. And, of course, with the growth of the jazz department here at the University of Illinois, which has, in fact, been growing a lot in the last 10 years.
It has really helped.
Has helped, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the Iron Post, where you're playing tonight, has been bringing a lot of jazz to this community. And, you know, I just want to take a moment to invite listeners who aren't in Champaign-Urbana, and there are probably more who aren't than who are, to let me know here at the station about jazz clubs in your community that I probably don't know about. We give a lot of time to the Iron Post because they do have a lot of people. And you can write to me with that information or with gigs that you want to tell me about at this email address. It's willcalendar@illinois.edu. That's W-I-L calendar at illinois.edu. I just wanted to take a moment to say that. Why don't we, before we talk a little bit about the creative process, because I want to ask you about that since you mentioned playing versus rehearsing, let's hear something from your new CD, Mambo Influenciado. Should we just hear the title track, or do we, Ugetsu might be a better...
Either one.
Well, let's go with the title track, I think. It's the Craig Russo Latin Jazz Project. And this brand new CD, which I guess officially gets released tonight at the Iron Post, and we're talking with Craig Russo here on Live and Local. Thank you. That was the tune, the title tune from the new CD by the Craig Russo Latin Jazz Project, Mambo Influenciado. The composer here, Dionisio Jesus Valdez Rodriguez. Is this a piece that, where did you find this piece?
Well, first of all, great Spanish.
Oh, thank you.
Great pronunciation. That long name really belongs to Chucho Valdez, who is the...
Oh, that's him.
That's him.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, he's the great, Grammy-winning, internationally known piano player, really instrumental in bringing together American jazz and traditional Cuban music for the last several decades. And this is one of his standards. So this is a Latin jazz standard, Mambo Influenciado. It's a fairly well-known tune. Of course, everything that we do it in our own way. So nothing is covered. We cover it in our own way. We take the tunes, we adapt them, we adopt them, reconstrue them a little bit to make them our own, because that's really an important part of what we do in the group, having such great musicians in the group. That's a big part of our creative process, is how do we take tunes, often which are well-known jazz standards, and rework them to fit into the Latin idiom.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the creative process, because you mentioned, I said something about rehearsing, and you said, well, we like to just get together and play. And yesterday I was talking briefly on the show with trumpeter Ray Sasaki, and he said something very similar. What happens when you get together to create an arrangement or a piece or a performance? You know, if you have a standard like this, how does that process work if you're not actually spending a lot of rehearsal time?
Well, what will happen usually? First of all, you can only do what I'm saying, what Ray was mentioning, if you have really good players who you already have a rapport with. So that there are certain things in Latin music, rhythms, I don't want to say it's formulaic, but you can say, well, this is this kind of a rhythm, a wah-wah-ko, or it has Afro-Cuban 6-8. And that is the first step in understanding how the rhythm section is going to play together. And if you have people who understand that language, that helps a lot right there. Now, what will happen for, let's say, a new CD or new tunes, we will rehearse before we go into the studio, and I'll bring these tunes to the rehearsal with an outline of how I want to do it or what ideas I have, and then we'll flesh it out. That's another great advantage of having these people in the group, because I think everyone in the group is very invested in not just doing what I tell them to do, and I don't really want that, but really putting their own creative imprint on it, both from its, how they play on the tune as well as to how it's arranged. And it's a democracy, although I have veto power.
Well, it's your name on the project, and that seems fair. When you get together, say for the first time to do a tune, how much is there stop and start? You know, you get things going, you might give initial direction and share ideas, and then things get going, and then somebody says, that doesn't work, let's try again, and how much of it is just on the fly, you know?
It's stop and start, because nobody wants to spend that much time rehearsing. So we really, we'll play through it, we'll play through the melody of the tune, then we'll stop. And then someone will say, well, how about let's play this chord here instead of that? And everybody will say, okay, yeah, that's a good idea. And the horn players will talk about how they're going to harmonize it, and everybody jots down with their pencils, and then we run it again, and really only takes a couple, three passes of that before it's there.
And then when you go play it somewhere, it probably changes a little bit.
It does. We keep the outlines. I have my book, so to speak, or my all the arrangements and things which I carry around, and we have an outline which we keep consistent. We have, depending on what we're playing and depending on how many people are in the group, of course, because it can vary from 4 to 6, that does dictate somewhat what we can do and how we can do it. Now, the version that people will hear tonight at the Iron Post is the full-fledged version of all the arrangements, because we have both horn players and we have 2 percussion. So that's as close as it's going to get to the recording. But we often do this with one horn player, and it still works. It just you just have to adapt.
How many of the same players who are on the CD will be with you tonight?
Well, the core group, most of the names that you mentioned will be there. Joan Hickey will not be there, and the singer, Nancy Kelly, will not be there. But everyone else, Chip McNeil, Chip Stevens, Josh Walden, Jeff Magby, who did I leave out?
Jeff Helgeson,
yes, everyone will be there.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a great time. And I'm looking here. Remind me, what time does that start tonight?
It starts at 7.
Starts at 7 o'clock at the Iron Post and goes till what?
Until
9, 10. 10, till 10 o'clock. And we're talking with Craig Russo here on Live and Local. Let's hear another track from this CD, Mambo Influenciado, which is just going to be officially announced tonight at the party. I love this tune, the name of the tune, Melodious Funk. I presume refers to Thelonious Monk in some way?
I think there is a reference to that, absolutely.
And what's the connection?
Well, the connection here is that this is a tune which I learned about really as a vocal tune from a very inventive vocalist named Giacomo Gates. But I also, when I hear tunes like that, sometimes I can imagine how they might sound in a different form, and I thought this particular tune would lend itself well to this. This is kind of a cha-cha-cha Montuno groove that we play on, and I could hear it that way, so I rewrote the melody a bit so that it fits with the Latin rhythm structure, and I would also have to say that the person who wrote this tune, Meredith D'Ambrosio, called me about it, and she was ecstatic. So that's always a good sign. You never know. You take somebody's tune and you change it, and they may hate it, but she loved it. She loved the whole CD. So that was a nice perk for her to reach out and say that.
Well, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'll bet you'll have it for sale at both of those parties.
Sure, and you know what? It only costs $10, which is probably less than you would pay for it if you try to download the individual 13 tracks. So it really is a bargain to buy the CD.
Yeah, and you even get notes on the program, which you wouldn't have if you just got it off of iTunes or something like
you
that.
You bet.
Yeah. Well, Craig, appreciate your joining us on the show. And let's go out with Melodious Funk by Meredith D'Ambrosio. It's the Craig Russo Latin Jazz Project playing at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7. And again at, what's the name in Springfield?
That's at Maya Fusion Restaurant in Springfield on Sunday, June 20th from 4 to 7. People can always go to my website, craigrusso.com, and check out those details.
And all the upcoming dates.
Right.
Thanks very much.
Okay, really enjoyed it.
Today's broadcast on Live and Local on FM 90.9 is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, an authorized Karastan Broadloom and Rug dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with a floor. And we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com. It's WYLL, FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana. We're the listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois.